emergency run scanners saw before the ship tore itself apart. That thing was a ship, blocky and ugly, with three bright jagged stripes across its hull, exactly as described by Serge Ukarian on the Panacea. Three lightning bolts, which Senator Nohar's people had confirmed as the insignia used by the Outer Rim Marauders, known as the Nihil. The vessel was moving through hyperspace, but not along the path of the swirling hyperspace tunnel, as had been the case with every ship Avar had ever seen. The Nihil ship was moving across hyperspace, at a right angle to the Legacy Run's direction of travel, with strange red and gold turbulence rippling in its wake.
I was given to understand that something like this was impossible,
Lena So said, her left hand idly stroking the head of one of her two giant pet cats. Avar knew their names, Matari and Voru. They were famous throughout the Republic, but she didn't know which was which. The Chancellor's words were slightly delayed, a factor of the distance between Coruscant and the Outer Rim territories. Senate-level comms were given the highest priority over the relays, but parsecs were parsecs. That would change, hopefully. Improving the Galactic Communications Network was one of Lena So's planned great works, but not if they didn't solve the issue at hand.
It should be impossible, Chancellor,
Velis Santeca said, sitting at the table next to his partner, Marlowe, who nodded in agreement. Avar sensed something there, some unspoken communication between the Santecas, a careful choice of words. Maybe Elza was right, she thought. Maybe we should have pushed them a little harder. Clearly he thought so. He was sitting across the table from her and caught her eye. Nothing more than the tiniest glance, but she knew exactly what he was thinking, even without Force-related assistance. She offered Elzar a tiny shrug. Whatever the Santecas knew, their help had been genuine and invaluable. Kaventar had told her there was no way he could have completed his Navidroid array without their assistance. She didn't know whether that was true. The Hetzalian engineer was clearly a genius, but the Santecas had certainly helped Kaven finish the array more quickly, and speed was of the essence here. The genius in question was on another screen, a comms droid projecting his holo against one of the briefing chamber's other blank walls. Tar had stayed on the rooted moon in Hetzal, and was using his array to process the data retrieved from the Legacy Run's flight recorder. The massive, stitched-together computer brain had been completely repaired from the damage suffered when it first activated. In fact, not just repaired, but enhanced. Chancellor So had ordered Transportation Secretary Lorelia to provide Kaventar with as many Navidroids as he needed. If he wanted a million, he was to get them, no matter the cost.
Can someone summarize our conclusions thus far, please?
Lena So said. Everyone looked at Avar. Somehow she had become the leader of the task force, despite sharing the room with an admiral, a senator, and various other high-level luminaries.
We've learned that a group calling themselves the Nihil was directly connected to the catastrophe in Hetzal and the subsequent emergencies. They're a low-level marauder operation working in the Outer Rim. Raiders, basically. They've done some terrible things, but they're a regional problem, handled by defense forces and security teams on a case-by-case basis. As bad as they are, they're small-time. It seems, though this is informed speculation, that whatever happened in Hetzal gave them the ability to predict emergencies, much like Kaventar's Navidroid array. They've used that ability twice that we're aware of. First, in Iriadu, as part of a botched extortion attempt, and second, at the 40th Emergence, where they attempted to prevent our teams from retrieving the Legacy Run's flight recorder, as they knew it would tie all of this directly back to them.
That's where we lost one of your colleagues, the Jedi Knight Teami, and two brave pilots in a long beam, Marcus Auger and Beth Petters, correct?
Eivor inclined her head slightly, in silent agreement. The Chancellor considered for a moment, scratching behind her Targon's ear and getting an appreciative purr in response.
Do we think these Nihil caused the Legacy Run disaster on purpose?
It doesn't seem like it, Elzar Mann said. He gestured to the main vidscreen, which was still displaying the Nihil ship crossing through hyperspace, running on a loop. This is clearly a ship, and armed. If they wanted to destroy the Legacy Run, they could have fired their weapons. They didn't. The Legacy Run just tore itself apart, trying to evade this thing. Besides, as Master Chris pointed out, this is a bunch of Outer Rim raiders. Opportunists, not planners. This all seems like a horrible accident.
An accident that they promptly tried to profit from in Iriadu, Senator Noir said, pounding his fist on the table. An accident that has cost the Outer Rim territories dearly in lives, opportunity, and treasure. They must be held responsible.
Behind him, his aide nodded, a blue-skinned Shagrian, slim, tall, and precise in dress and manner. Janai Wataro, Eivor recalled.
They will, Chancellor So said, holding up a hand. First, we need to know whether it can happen again. Santekas, what is your view?
Marlowe and Velis glanced at each other briefly before speaking.
We believe this was a tragic fluke, Chancellor, Marlowe said. We do not think there is an overarching issue with hyperspace. However, this...
Here he pointed at the vidscreen, still displaying the brutish ship looping across the Legacy Run's path over and over again, trailing its strange red and gold wake.
Suggests the Nihil have an understanding of hyperspace that is at best unique and at worst hugely dangerous. That should be investigated, and quickly.
Well, perfect then, Senator Noir said. You heard the man, Chancellor. Hyperspace is fine. The Outer Rim is suffering, and I know you want Starlight Beacon to come online. It's time to reopen the lanes.
Not yet, Senator, she said. We know what happened, more or less. But just because it was an accident once doesn't mean it couldn't be done purposely in the future. It's not such a leap for marauders to become terrorists. This threat has to be eliminated.
Senator Noir began to sputter out a protest.
Enough, Noir, Chancellor So said. I've made my decision. I know you're concerned about the Rim. I am as well. But I'm responsible for the entire galaxy. And in case you've forgotten, hyperspace goes everywhere. If the Nihil can attack us in the lanes, nowhere is safe.
She turned to look at Admiral Cornara, standing at the far end of the briefing room.
Admiral, I want you to activate the defense provisions in the RDC agreements. Gather a fleet from the treaty worlds and hunt down the Nihil. I've read the reports. Even if there really is no further danger to hyperspace, there are still dangerous criminals who should not be able to operate with impunity. Even if they confine their raids to the Outer Rim, we are all the Republic.
Very good, Chancellor,
he said, sounding pleased. Then again, he was an admiral.
Do you have any idea where the Nihil are based?
Chancellor So continued.
Their headquarters?
If I may, Chancellor?
Kaventar interjected, raising a hand.
I've already set my array to calculating the likely origin point of the Nihil vessel that caused the Legacy Run disaster. It originated in a spot near the Kerr Nebula. I don't know if that's their base, but it's a place to start.
Very good, Mr. Tarr,
she replied, then looked out across the Third Horizon's briefing chamber.
You have all done very well so far, she said. You discovered the cause of the Legacy Run tragedy. Now I give you a new assignment. You are to make sure it never, ever happens again. Whatever it takes.
Chancellor Lena So leaned forward,
and both of her giant cats lifted their heads, their ears flattening in a threat display as they sensed their master's emotional intensity. Eivor, despite herself, despite all her skill and training, found herself glad that half a galaxy separated her from this woman. She did not envy the Nihil, who now found themselves under the gaze of a person who had demonstrated the will to reshape the entire galaxy.
"I want these Nihil brought to justice," the Chancellor said. "Every last one."
Chapter 34. No Space. The Great Hall of the Nihil.
"This is the moment," Marcion Rowe thought. "The new beginning."
He stood in the center of the huge platform that was the Great Hall of the Nihil, open on all four sides to the nothingness of No Space. Unsettling multicolored lights flickering in the far distance. Nothing interrupting them, but the silhouettes of the vessels that had brought Marcion and the three Tempest Runners to this forsaken, desolate place. The hall was empty. No feast tables interrupted its expanse, and the four of them were alone and unmasked. Marcion looked at these people, Kossuth, Panata, and Lorna D. They resented him, and they resented one another, and all believed they could do better than the rest. There was no unity. There was no purpose to the Nihil, other than a desire for profit and a shared love for taking from others, flouting the system. That had to change. This was the moment.
"I heard from my spy in Senator Noor's office," Marcion said. "The Jedi and the Republic have accessed the flight recorder they got when Lorna D failed her mission."
Lorna D blinked, but didn't say anything.
"They know we're responsible for the Legacy Run disaster," Marcion continued. "One of Pan Ata's clouds was returning from a raid using a path, and ended up almost smashing into the run."
"That's not our fault," Kossuth said. "How are we supposed to know?"
"It doesn't matter if that wasn't our fault. Iriadu sure as hell was," Marcion said.
For once, Kossuth shut his mouth.
"So, it's what happened in Hetzar. All the emergencies. Kossuth's idiotic move at Iriadu, and then Lorna D basically proved we're involved when she tried and failed to get the flight recorder,"
Pan Ata said, his voice like rubble falling off a cliff.
"We're all over this. This is bad."
"What do you think is going to happen?"
Lorna D said.
"They'll hunt us down,"
Pan said.
"The Republic and the Jedi, too. We're not just some regional raider crew anymore. We're a threat to them. We caused the whole damn hyperspace blockade. They want to make an example of us."
"Look,
we've had a good run,"
Kossuth said. "Everyone's made money. It's not like we have to do this. We can just go. And all those storms and clouds and strikes and our tempests? The ones who follow us, believe in us. What about them?"
Lorna D said. Kossuth shrugged.
"They can do whatever they want. They want to keep the Nihil going, keep riding the storm. That's their business. Nothing saying we can't ever retire. What, we gotta be Tempest Runners until the day we die? What about living off the spoils of a lifetime of hard work?"
Pan Ata snorted.
"You think they'll see it that way? They'll think we cut and run."
Kossuth shrugged again.
"The Nihil are about freedom, right? Do what you want, when you want. Well, maybe I want to get the hell out of here before a Jedi pulls out their lightsaber and cuts off my head."
"Didn't you once say you wanted to fight a Jedi?"
Marcian Rose said, his tone mild.
Get yourself a good story to tell.
Kossip said nothing.
This is the moment, Marcian thought. He punched Kossip right in his stupid, cunning, savage face.
Marcian's gloves were reinforced with armored plates and acceleration compensators. He could punch a hole in a durasteel wall and not feel a twinge of pain. He heard the sound of Kossip's stupid, cunning, savage nose crumpled under his fist. And by the path, it felt good. Pan Ata and Lorna D didn't move. They seemed stunned. This was not something the Eye did. The Eye didn't fight, especially not the runners. He didn't have a Tempest to back him up. The Eye got a third of the take and was happy with it.
Change can be challenging, my friends, Marcian thought.
Kossip staggered back, his eyes gone wide, blood gushing from his nose, but only for a second. The man was no stranger to pain, and Marcian supposed he was no stranger to surprise punches in the face either. Kossip's eyes narrowed, and his hand ducked inside his fur cape where he kept a secret blaster, in violation of the Great Hall's rules. Marcian had known about it for years. Marcian whipped up his arm, and one of the vibrostars he kept in a sheath along his wrist wickered out. It sheared through half of Kossip's hand along with the butt of his blaster, and chunks of metal and flesh fell to the floor. Kossip, to his credit, tried to keep fighting. Blood spurted from his nose and sprayed from what was left of his right hand. And yet he lunged forward, swinging a pretty credible punch with his left. Marcian caught it, spun, and threw Kossip to the platform. He landed with a hollow, wet sound in a pool of his own blood. Kossip said, the first sound he'd made since the fight began. The man was tough, there was no doubt about it. Marcian put his boot on the Tempest Runner's chest. Not lightly, either. He pressed hard, like he wanted to shove the man right through the blasted deck into the empty space on the other side.
I am the Eye of the Nihil, as was my father before me, he said. We made this organization what it is. And I will not watch you destroy it with your selfishness, fear, and weakness. You made a mistake at Iriadu, Kossip, and it showed us your belly. You need to remember how this works, Chief. The Nihil need to stay strong, and one way that happens...
He bent at the waist, his eyes narrowed. His teeth bared,
is by cutting out the weak.
Marcian pressed harder with his boot.
I have a plan to fix this, he said. Fix all of it. Do you want to hear it?
Marcian Rowe put a little more weight on Kossip's chest, and the man groaned. He nodded. Marcian stepped back and watched as Kossip pulled himself to his feet.
I understand why you're all worried. This isn't a good situation, and it's on the verge of getting worse. But listen to what I have to say, Marcian said.
The Tempest Runners looked at him, wary, but interested.
This will solve everything, Marcian said. Get the Republic off our backs. Maybe even kill some Jedi. It'll be back to business as usual. No more emergencies. Just the paths and the plunder. We can start bringing in new strikes again. The good times will keep on rolling.
The wariness dialed back, and the interest dialed up, even from Kossip. Marcian knew it would. None of them wanted to go it alone, without the paths. They'd all made piles of credits from the Nihil, but they spent it as fast as it came in. On fancy ships and fancy clothes and elaborate banquets. Their greed would make the decision for them.
Look, we're smarter and faster, and we've got the paths,
he went on.
We're 10 steps ahead of the Republic. I'm telling you, we can fix this whole thing. The Nihil are my whole life. I'm not walking away without a fight.
We're listening,
Panetta said.
Okay,
Marcion said.
We can get the flight recorder back, and without that, the Republic won't be able to find us. We can lie low for a bit, reorganize, even move to the midrim. The paths let us work anywhere in the galaxy.
He pointed at Kasav and Lorna D, one with each hand.
You both made big mistakes, and your crews saw you do it. People are talking. You look weak. Your storms have to be thinking maybe this is their chance for a hostile takeover. You can fix all that. Do it right. You'll be heroes to your Tempests.
He smiled at them. A big, encouraging smile. They didn't seem reassured.
Kasav, I've gotten word from my Republic sources that the flight recorder was damaged when the Legacy Run blew up. They got some data from it, but not the full set. Not enough to find us. It's being sent to a special facility to extract the rest. You can intercept the transport and destroy it. Lorna D., go to Elfrona and help your crew there finish that kidnapping job. We might need funds, and since that operation's already in progress, we might as well bring in some credits, show the crews we're still taking their needs into account. This is a time for unity. We have to come together. I'll give you both the paths you need to get it done.
Lorna D nodded. Then, after a moment, so did Kasav.
Do you need me to do anything?
Panetta said. That was unusual. A Tempest Runner asking the Eye for orders was just not the way it was done. The dynamic had shifted. They could all feel it. The moment for them to leave had come and gone. They had acknowledged that if they were going to stay with the Nihil and reap all its benefits, then they needed the Eye to save them from themselves.
No, Pan,
Marcion said.
You're fine, for now.
Should we vote?
Lorna D asked.
Absolutely,
Marcion Rowe said. They did. It was unanimous.
Go,
Marcion said.
We don't have a lot of time. Save the Nihil.
The Tempest Runners left, heading for the airlock. Marcion let them get a few steps away, then spoke.
Kasav,
he said. The man turned back. Marcion pointed.
Don't forget your hand.
Chapter 35, Elfrona System.
Bell couldn't believe what he was seeing. A hatch along the hull of the Nihil ship had opened, and a small figure had been tossed out. Just thrown, like nothing. He gasped. Loden, ahead of him in the pilot's seat, put the Vector into a steep dive.
Better one, his master said. You will save the child. I will continue on and save the others. Do not fear. I am so proud to have been your teacher. I believe in you.
The Vector's cockpit levered open, the wind rushing past so loud that speech was impossible.
But what more was there to say?
Bell unclipped his safety harness and leapt out. Immediately, gravity took him, and he fell into a spin. That didn't matter. They were kilometers above the surface of Elfrona,
which meant he had some time, but not much. If he was going to save the little girl, and he was sure it was the little girl, a child tossed away by the Nihil like garbage, he needed to focus. He pushed away his awareness of Loden's vector, shooting back up into the sky, continuing the chase alongside Indira in her own ship. He forgot about the ground, the sky, everything but the Force, and searched for a tiny spot of light within it, the sense of a lost child who needed to be saved. There! Bell could barely open his eyes against the rushing wind. He wished he had a pair of goggles, but truthfully, he didn't need them, or his eyes either. He had the Force. He wrapped his arms and legs tight to himself and angled his body down, feeling himself shoot forward as he became more aerodynamic. Bell reached out to the Force, asking it to push him even faster. The little girl was flailing, and that surely created some wind resistance, but they would both reach terminal velocity soon enough, and then he wouldn't be able to catch her. The second or so of fall before Bell had leapt from the vector had undoubtedly given her a significant lead. But the Force answered, and perhaps the sleekness of his Jedi leathers let him shoot forward more quickly than he otherwise might. All he knew was that he was getting closer. The blithe child's terror was looming in his senses, rising, her fear overwhelming. He put it aside. As he approached, he reached out and used the Force to pull the little girl to him. He enfolded her in his arms. She struggled. Of course she did. Who wouldn't? He pulled part of his tunic over their heads, enough to block some of the wind, then looked at the child. He didn't know that he'd ever seen someone so frightened. Bell pointed to the Jedi insignia on his chest. Miraculously, she calmed. She knew what he was, and she thought she was saved. Not yet, Bell thought. He pulled her close, cupped his hand over her ear to block the wind, and spoke.
Close your eyes, he said. I'm with you now. You're not alone.
He had no idea if she had heard, but he'd done what he could to calm her. Now, he had to focus. Bell glanced down, squinting against the wind. He was looking for a soft spot. Water, maybe. Even a slow slope they might be able to roll down. Anything to ease their landing. There was nothing. Just the rough landscape of the planet. The swirls of the magnetic mountain ranges and rust plains between. Elfrona was not a soft world. They were falling from a height 100 times higher than anything he'd ever tried in training. And even then, he'd never landed successfully. For a moment, he hoped against hope that perhaps Porter Engel could miraculously appear at the last minute. But the Akruki was far away by then. And in any case, he had his own Blythe to save. No one was coming to save him or the girl. He had to do it all. And he had to do it alone. Bell opened himself to the Force. He did not think about the ground. He thought about the child in his arms, and how unfair it was that these things had happened to her. He knew he had the power to save her, to let her continue living in the light. Why would the cosmic force have given him his abilities if not for this very purpose? The wind was not his enemy, nor gravity itself. They were both part of the Force, just as he was, just as the child was. If he fought them, he was fighting himself. He should not try to fight. He should try to understand. Bell Zedifar relaxed. He came to know something profound. Perhaps something about the Force. Perhaps something about himself. Something he would try to understand more clearly later. He thought it was the reason that he had been so bad at saving himself from falls, despite his master's best efforts to teach him. Being a Jedi was not about saving oneself. It was about saving others. The roar of the wind past Bell's ears lessened, becoming no stronger than a powerful breeze. He could hear the little Blythe. She was praying or chanting.
He couldn't understand the words, but it was the same short phrase over and over. The wind quieted further to silence.
Bell opened his eyes. They were barely 10 meters from the ground, and they drifted downward, slow as a leaf, to land gently on the slate-colored ground. He could understand what the girl was saying now.
"I'm not alone." He sat up.
The girl clung to him.
"We're okay now," he said. "What's your name?"
She looked at him, eyes wide.
"I'm Bee,"
she said.
"But that's just what people call me. My big name is Balin."
"That's a little like mine," he said. "I'm Bell. We're safe now, Balin. Everything's gonna be all right."
The child gave him a dubious look, the look of a kid who knew she was being told something untrue by an adult, no matter how much she wanted to believe it. Her face cracked, and she burst into tears.
Bell just held her. He looked up at the sky, searching for the vectors or the Nihil ship. Nothing. Not even an exhaust trail.
"Everything's gonna be all right," he thought.
He didn't believe it either.
Interlude. The Council.
Jorimali positioned herself before the comms droid that would transmit her image to Coruscant, to the chamber at the very top of the Order's Great Temple, where the Jedi Council met to deliberate. At that moment, she was aboard the Atraxia, the Jedi's beautiful, elegant starship, almost a temple in and of itself. The ship had dropped out of hyperspace near Felucia, expressly so Jorah could attend this particular meeting with maximal stability and clarity of signal. It was, in all likelihood, the last vote she would ever take as a member of the Jedi Council. The Starlight Beacon would be brought online very soon, at which point Jorah would officially step down from the Council and take on her new role, running the Jedi Quarter on the massive space station. Jorimali had missed many votes in the past. While she took her role seriously, she generally believed she could serve the light more effectively out in the galaxy than sitting in the Jedi Temple. But this day's deliberations were significant, and the entire Council had assembled. Those not physically present on Coruscant sending their image via high-priority holo-transmissions, as Jorah was doing. The comms droid projected an image of the Council chamber for Jorah to see. The elegant circular room with huge windows in every wall providing uninterrupted views of the Coruscant cityscape. It was day at the temple, and the sun shone in, illuminating the beautiful mosaic inlaid upon the floor. The windows were symbolically significant as well. The High Council conducted its business in the open, with nothing to hide. 12 seats were set at equal intervals around the room, each sized and designed for its particular occupant. Yariel Poof, Reyna Kant, Oppo Rancisis, Keaton Murag, and Adelai Caro were present in person. 6 others, including herself, were appearing via hologram, with yet another droid in the council chamber projecting their images to the other attendees. 11 council members, all but Master Rosacen, in the midst of a delicate diplomatic negotiation from which he could not step away. Jorah thought about her Padawan, Reeth Silas. She wished he were there with her. He could learn many things from observing a council meeting. Truth be told, she just missed the young man. Reeth was 17, a good student, perhaps not entirely thrilled that he would soon follow his master to the Starlight Beacon instead of remaining on Coruscant. The frontier held little interest for him. Well, of course, Reeth was in fact 17. No space station, no matter how exotic, could compare to the greatest city in the galaxy. She had left him behind to give him a bit more time on Coruscant before he joined her in the Outer Rim, a small kindness she had been happy to provide. But just as his time in the Core was done, Reeth had been pulled into a mission alongside 2 more experienced Jedi. Komok Vitus, and Orla Jareni, both knights. She had questions about Orla, but Komak was steady. Wreath would be fine, if perhaps a little frustrated at losing his last bit of time in the Corps. Ah, well, such was the life of a Jedi. Better get used to it early. She glanced at Skeer, sitting across the table from her, watching silently, his long, clawed arms folded across his chest. He looked imposing, as always, a slab of scaled muscle and sharp teeth in Jedi robes. Trandoshan Jedi were rare, because the planet's culture was built around predation and supremacy, ideals that did not always mesh well with the precepts of the Order. Even when Trandoshan children did have an affinity for the Force, it was unusual for them to be brought to the Jedi Temple for training. But Skeer had not only made it to Coruscant, but had also excelled, becoming a full-fledged Jedi Master. All things were possible. Jorah didn't imagine she would have direct need of him during this council meeting, and she thought he knew that too. But Skeer was never far, and it was often when she'd thought she'd have no need for him at all that he'd come in most handy. Skeer had personally saved her life 4 times. And counting, she assumed. The meeting began, and the matter to be discussed truly was important. The Chancellor of the Republic, Lena So, had asked the Jedi to participate directly in a mission she had authorized for the Republic Defense Coalition to hunt down and either imprison or eradicate a group of Outer Rim raiders who called themselves the Nihil. These people had interfered with the galactic hyperspace lanes in what appeared to be an effort to extort systems out of enormous sums of money. Bad enough, but their actions had also caused the deaths of billions of people and paralyzed a wide swath of the galaxy. The Nihil must be dealt with. The only question was the role of the Jedi in that action. Jorah listened as the various council members presented their arguments. Great emphasis was placed on interpreting the will of the Force, listening for the voice of the Force, taking direction from the Force, and so on. Jorah found that a little tiresome. A philosophical vortex. For her, it was very simple. The Jedi were deeply connected to the light side of the Force. Whatever choice any Jedi made was therefore the will of the Force. Study and focus allowed the Jedi to become better instruments of that will, certainly, in much the way that a well-maintained lightsaber functioned better than one that had fallen into disrepair. But getting caught up in an endless debate about what the Force might want was paralyzing, a waste of time.
This is a military action,
Master Adampo said, stroking the long white whiskers dangling from her chin, her voice strong and direct.
The Jedi are not a military force. I believe it is that simple.
But we have been a military force in the past,
said Oppo Rancisis.
In fact, our predecessors waged and won the Great Sith War. There is endless precedent in the Chronicles for this sort of thing.
True. But we are not at war now. We are the farthest thing from it, said Reyna Kant.
Not the farthest, replied Yariel Poof. There have been times in our history when the Order was reduced to but a handful of members.
Why are we talking about history?
Said Efru Shin, the newest member of the Council. Amon Calamari, selected by Yoda to hold his seat while the Great Master was on his sabbatical from council business.
We should be concerned with now, not old empires or victories or defeats. What is our role in this Republic at this precise moment?
She lifted a hand.
I believe that the Jedi should, at all times, present to the many peoples of the galaxy a way of life centered on peace. We must show them the way. The Republic is uniquely receptive to such an idea at this moment.
Yes, but we are guardians of two ideals, are we not?
Said Yariel Poof.
Sometimes, unfortunately, they come into conflict. We must always strive for peace, but also justice. Peace without justice is flawed, hollow at its core. It is the peace provided by tyranny.
I do not believe there has been a single instance of the Jedi getting involved in the military matters of galactic government that has generated anything but endless complexity,
Efru replied.
So we should strive only for simplicity. The galaxy is not a simple place, Master Shin,
said Grand Master Laru. And on it went. Jorah listened, but did not speak, letting the other council members make their positions clear. Those positions settled, with 5 in favor of agreeing to the Chancellor's request to include Jedi in the mission against the Nihil, and 5 against. The final choice was down to Jorah, which seemed appropriate to her, since it would be her ship, the Atraxia, that would accompany Republic forces on the mission. The other members of the council looked at her, waiting for her to speak. And so she did.
You know I'm not much for words. I prefer to act. In this case, I think the decision is simple enough. It's the same question I ask myself whenever I do anything at all.
She again wished Wreath were here, thinking of the lesson he might learn here. She would have to pass it along to him later.
Does the action I'm about to take bring more light to the galaxy?
She spread her hands.
In this case, I believe the answer is clear. The Nihil have snuffed out countless people across the Outer Rim and caused endless strife and suffering. We should act to reduce their ability to do anything like this again. I will take the Atraxia and accompany Admiral Cronara's fleet.
And then what?
Asked Oppo Rancissus.
Do you have any sense of what you will do once the Nihil are found?
Yes, Master Rancissus, Jorah said. Whatever the Force wills.
Part 3. The Storm. Chapter 36. The Outer Rim. The Kerr Nebula. The new elite dropped out of hyperspace near a bright green nebula that cast the ship's bridge in a sickly, swamp-like hue. Kossif hated the color. He was from Sreelur, out in Hutt space, a dry world where the only time you saw something green was when it was covered with mold. Green was unnatural, a bad shade, a bad omen. A lot of those going around. The ship's bridge was silent. No music. Kossif didn't feel like it. He stared down at what remained of his hand as the medical droid attended to it, sealing off the slashed open flesh, patching it up as best it could. His option seemed to be to retain a claw with a few fingers still attached, or just lop off what was left and go for a prosthetic. Either way, his blaster hand was never going to be the same. He'd have to learn to shoot with his left.
Marcion Roe, Kossif thought. Marcion blasted Roe!
Did I tell you when those Republic ships would show up?
Wetbub said.
We're bringing plenty of firepower. Should be able to knock down anything they bring. Get rid of that flight recorder thing Marcion Roe told us about. And then it's back to business.
The Gungan grinned, his huge, idiotic teeth glowing like cave mushrooms in the weird light from the nebula.
I'm sick of all this waiting around,
Bub went on.
We're the Nihil! We need to ride the storm!
Kossif looked up from the wreckage of his favorite hand, scowling at his lieutenant.
Listen, you stupid cloaca! You're gonna wait as long as I tell you to. And then you'll do exactly what I tell you to!
Wetbub held up his hands, his 2 perfectly fine hands, like he was rubbing it in, and backed away.
Right, boss. Oof.
he said. Bup looked like a corpse. A moldy, 3 weeks dead corpse. Kossuth glanced around the bridge at the rest of his crew. Everyone did. That blasted nebula. Outside the bridge viewport, he saw the rest of his Tempest dropping in, as ordered. About 100 ships, mostly small. Strike ships and cloud ships, with a scattering of larger vessels. Assault craft, modified freighters, that kind of thing. His people, all loyal to him, and him alone. They were all Nihil, sure, but these crews didn't take orders from Pan Eta or Lorna D, and definitely not Marcion Ro. Kossuth considered his fleet, casting his eyes from one ship to the next. Basically, his entire Tempest, barring a few of his people off on jobs, might not be the prettiest in the galaxy, but it was powerful. It could cause some real damage. Pan Eta chose stuck-up thinkers for his crews. Lorna D picked liars and sneaks. Kossuth, now he had always chosen warriors. He thought if it came to it, his Tempest could probably take Pan Eta's and Lorna D's groups combined. Warriors, every one of them. And they all believed the same thing. A lesson Kossuth had learned by the time he could walk. When you're in a battle, you never stop fighting. Win or die. In fact, looking at his Tempest swarming around the new elite, the idea occurred to him, and not for the first time, did he really need the Nihil at all? Why not just take his people and go? Head across the rim. Find somewhere else to work. The paths were useful, but he didn't need them. And he sure as hell didn't need Marcion Ro. It was a big galaxy. He could start a new Nihil. He'd learned all the techniques. No reason he couldn't use them somewhere else. But none of this blasted storm business. He was sick of it. Maybe something to do with fire. That could work. Sparks on the bottom, then flames, blaze, inferno. Oh, yeah, that could work just fine. And him at the top, as the sun. Kossuth, a big, powerful star around which all else revolved. Perfect. It would work like a charm. There were always people looking for something to belong to, a way to get ahead. And the Republic was rich, fat, ready for plucking. The Jedi investigators Marcion was so scared of were looking for the Nihil, not him specifically. Yeah, maybe they knew his name, his ship, after Iriadu. But he could change both. If Marcion Ro and the other Tempest Runners loved the organization so much, let them take the heat and figure out how to deal with everyone who wanted the Nihil gone. In fact, why the hell was he waiting around for those Republic ships with that stupid flight recorder? Better if they kept it and used it to track down Marcion and the rest of the Nihil. It would solve two problems at once. He had his entire Tempest assembled right here. He could give the order to leave right now. Kossuth waved the medical droid back. He reached for the communications controls on his command chair, a little awkwardly with his bad hand, and began to key in the code for a fleet-wide transmission. Goodbye, Storm. Hello, Fire, he thought. Delix, over at the monitoring station, spoke.
Ships dropping out of hyperspace, Kossuth.
He looked at her. His eyes narrowed.
The Republic transports?
She leaned forward, as if she couldn't believe what the screens were telling her.
It might be the Republic, but it's not just a few ships, she said, and looked back up at him, her organic eye gone wide. It's a battle fleet.
Admiral Cronara stood on the bridge of the Third Horizon, analyzing the tactical display,
focusing on the rapidly updating data about the enemy forces provided by his ship's sensors. It looked like his coalition was about to face the full Nihil fleet, and this didn't seem like a force of disorganized marauders either. Dozens of ships of all sizes, from fighters all the way up to a central flagship, some kind of custom-built thing about the size of a standard corvette. Scans were already building a picture of its military capabilities, which seemed fairly significant. It was no pushover. None of the ships out there seemed to be, in fact. Every single one was armed with everything from laser cannons to magnetic mines. There was potential here for a battle the likes of which he, a ranking military commander in the Republic, hadn't seen in decades. That was the problem with how good Chancellor So was at her job. The huts were quiet, the Mandalorians hadn't kicked up any trouble since before he was born, and the largest engagement most of his people ever got to handle was on the level of a skirmish. There wasn't even a standing Republic fleet, just the odd emissary-class cruiser like the Third Horizon, and various smaller support and tactical ships. By and large, sectors and planets handled their own security. On the rare occurrence of a more serious threat, the Republic Defense Coalition treaties could be activated. Prosperous worlds like Chandrilla and Alderaan were called upon to supply ships and personnel under the command of Republic military officers, which were returned to their homeworlds once the crisis was complete. That's what had happened here. On the Chancellor's orders, Granara put out the call, and he'd managed to assemble a good-sized task force. Most of the treaty worlds had been more than happy to contribute materiel. All wanted a chance to strike back against these Nihil, the criminals that had crippled the galaxy. Under his direct command, Granara had the Third Horizon, with its long beams and a fairly robust complement of Incom Z-28 Skywings. In fact, his hangars comprised most of the small division of attack craft under direct Republic control. Beyond that, RDC member worlds had contributed 5 Pacifier-class sector patrol cruisers, each with a crew of 100, as well as their own long beam and skywing squadrons. And another group was on the way, not a signatory to the RDC treaty, and not necessarily the people he would have invited along, but also not the sort of people you could easily refuse, especially considering the tragedy visited upon them by the emergences. Another ship was visible on his display, outside his command authority, but certainly an ally, the Atraxia, the one large starship under direct control of the Jedi Order. It was a beautiful ship, designed to subtly evoke the Order's symbol with its hull and sweeping curved wings accented in white and gold. While the Atraxia would be permanently stationed at the new Starlight Beacon Station once it opened, today it had come to offer support to the RDC Task Force. The ship was lightly armed, but it could carry a large number of vectors, and on this day its hangars were full. Before the ship arrived, Granara hadn't been certain the Jedi would participate at all, despite Chancellor So's request. The Jedi were linked to the Republic in many ways, but they could and did go their own way whenever they thought it was appropriate. Whatever their reasoning, he was glad the Order was here. Jedi tended to come in handy. Admiral Granara would never wish for war, but he would take any opportunity he got to assemble a coalition task force and get real-time combat and coordination training. Even better, there was no moral ambiguity about the situation. These Nihil were clearly on the wrong side of history. A fully justified military action against a significant force? A chance to make the galaxy safer? Yes, he'd take it. He refocused on the display, thinking through the tactics he was about to employ. His forces were in green, in disciplined, uniform rows. The Nihil were a swirling, chaotic blob of red. A lot of ships out there made it difficult to predict how things might go. Granara had studied the few bits of intelligence available on the Nihil, gathered by security forces from various Outer Rim worlds. By reputation, they were a pretty savage bunch. More troubling, Reports suggested they could almost appear and disappear at will. He didn't know what that meant, but it suggested they could have some very unique tactics to deploy. Well, let them. He had some tactics of his own. He looked again at his own small fleet on the display. Not exactly an armada, but plenty of force, all things considered. If the Nihil wanted a fight, they'd get one. Admiral Cronara keyed his comlink, calling over to the Atraxia in order to coordinate his initial moves with its commander, Master Joramali. He knew her decently well. She had a strong military mind, as much as any Jedi could, and was slated to run the Starlight Beacon's Jedi Temple once the station became operational. But since that had not yet come to pass, she was here, in command of the Order's response to the Nihil.
"Master Mali," he said, "we're going to attempt to contact the Nihil command ship. Occlusion from the nebula means there aren't many spots to jump to hyperspace, and we've blocked most of them off. The majority of the Nihil ships don't look big enough to have onboard navicomps that can calculate another way out in any reasonable amount of time. They'll have to either talk or fight. They can't just run. If they do decide to light things up, you'll be ready to go?"
"Of course, Admiral,"
came the smooth voice of Joramali.
"I think I'll take a vector out myself if it comes to that. I have Avar Chris here on the Ataraxia. She can help link the Jedi together as she did in the Hetzal system."
"Fantastic,"
the Admiral said, and he meant it. The Jedi were always impressive, but what he'd seen in Hetzal during the Legacy Run disaster was remarkable. If Avar Chris could apply that skill set to an actual battle, it could bring a decisive advantage. Admiral Cronara clasped his hands at the small of his back. He gave the tactical display one last look, then gave the order.
"Open a comm channel," he said. "We'll see if these criminals want to talk."
"They're trying to talk to us,"
Delek said.
"Don't answer,"
Kossif snapped.
"I wasn't going to,"
she snapped back.
"But we need to do something. All this space dust from the nebula means we can't just jump from anywhere without blowing up. The Republic ships are blocking the closest clear access point to the hyperlane. We could get out with a path, but the Eye didn't give us one."
"We gotta attack, right?"
said Gravin at the gunner station.
"Battle fleet or not, if we don't kill these guys, no more Nihil!"
"Just give me a second to think, will you?"
Kossif snapped. He turned to Delix.
"Is there another one? An open spot to get to hyperspace without a path, I mean?"
The woman consulted her screens.
"Yeah, not super close, but if we go for it full throttle, we can probably get there before the Republic ships catch us."
"Okay,"
Kossif said.
"Give the order. All ships head for that other exit point. From there, scatter. And wait until they hear from me before they do anything. Anything! You got it? No rage, no nothing! Just lie low until I give the word."
Gravin spoke up.
"I don't want to question you, boss, but..."
"Then don't!"
Kossif said, giving him a dark look. His hand hurt. His head hurt. Everything hurt. He just wanted something good to happen. Gravin didn't seem to get that, though. He swallowed. His throat felt dry as dust.
"The thing is, Kossif, Marcian Rowe told me, Wetbub, and Delix about the orders he gave you. And he said that if you didn't do what he wanted, then..."
"Then what? What do you think you're going to do?"
Kossif roared, pulling his blaster with his left hand and pointing it at his supposedly loyal Storm. Now Marcian Rowe was telling his people what to do? Giving them instructions behind his back? Wetbub and Delix drew their own weapons. Well, Delix just powered up her shoulder cannon, but he saw it light up and heard the little hum. The other Nihil on the bridge froze, unsure of what to do, waiting to see how it would all play out.
We are supposed to kill you,
Wetbub said.
That's what the Eye told us to do if you didn't do what he said. He said what you did at Iriadu put everyone in danger. And this is the only way to keep us all safe. Only way to make things good again.
What I did at Iriadu? You traitorous lizard! What I did? Like you weren't standing right there next to me, helping me run the whole job!
Kossuth thought. He could maybe have taken all three, but not with his bad hand. He kept his blaster aimed at Gravin and spoke, snarling out the words.
You think Marcion Rome knew we'd end up with a Republic battle fleet on us? Look, this is one of two things. Either he knew, and he sent us out here to die, or he didn't. In which case, he'd want us to get out of here to live to fight another day. Whichever it is, we need to go! We can find another way to deal with the stupid flight recorder!
He saw his three storms considering these possibilities.
Wetbub, get on the comm! Try to raise the Eye! Tell him what's happening and ask him for a path out of here!
The Gungan gave it a second or two, then holstered his blaster and turned to the communications console.
Delix! You give the order to the rest of the fleet! Tell them to run! Get to the other transfer point as fast as they can! Gravin, get back to the weapons grid! Just in case these Republic bastards decide to start shooting!
No answer from Marcion Rowe,
Wetbub said.
But the Republic cruiser is hailing us again!
Kossuth gave his lieutenants a knowing look.
You see?
That look conveyed.
We're on our own out here!
Without another word, they put away their weapons and followed his orders. He felt the New Elite's engines kick into a higher gear as it prepared for its run to escape the trap he was increasingly sure Marcion Rowe had led them into.
Huh?
Delix said, her voice uncharacteristically subdued.
What now?
He asked.
Another fleet just dropped in, from the other hyperspace transfer point. We're boxed in, Kossuth.
Tell me it's Nihil, he said. Tell me it's Panitis, Tempest!
It's not. The ship's all register is being from Iriadu.
That's where we messed up the extortion job,
Wetbub said.
Where that moon got obliterated.
An entirely unnecessary clarification. Everyone on that bridge knew exactly what they had done at Iriadu.
What they might not know, though, was the reputation of the people who lived there. Kossuth did. He had looked them up after his little visit to their system. What he'd learned had made him curse for a minute straight. Turned out that the Nihil weren't the only predators in the galaxy. Iriadu was one of those warrior planets. A whole culture steeped in ideals of revenge and justice and blood and honor. Easily slighted. Always having duels and poisoning each other and whatever. But for the moment, it seemed like they had stopped squabbling long enough to come together to hunt him.
Guess we're not running after all,
Kossuth said.
Tell every ship, time to fight. Let's kill them all!
Everyone on the bridge turned back to their stations, getting ready for battle. They seemed excited, even his idiot lieutenants, who should probably know better. Kossuth tapped a control on his command chair, and the music started. More wreck punk, throbbing and pulsing and clanging. He set the volume to full.
For the Nihil!
Kossuth shouted, painfully closing his maimed hand into a fist and holding it above his head.
For the storm!
Came the answering cry, anticipatory and eager. Kossuth looked at his crew, his eyes flitting from face to face. In the gree light of the Kerr Nebula, still pouring through the bridge viewports, they all looked like corpses, 3 days dead.
For the Nihil, Kossuth thought. For the storm.
Chapter 37, Space, Elfrona System. Loden Greatstorm pushed his Vector a bit harder, accelerating toward the wounded Nihil ship through the vacuum, the iron and rust-colored orb of Elfrona receding behind them. He sensed Indira doing the same in her own ship. Not far now. He knew that a safe jump to light speed required a significant amount of distance from Elfrona. Like the world's surface, the space around the planet was a roiling mass of magnetic fields and gravity distortions. There was no way the Nihil would be able to escape before he and Indira caught them. And then, well, the Force would be his guide. He did not want the Nihil kidnappers to die. He did not want anyone to die, ever. But sometimes, he had found, people chose their own ends, and there was nothing he, or even the Force, seemed to be able to do about it. Well, that was fatalistic. He'd do everything he could to save every life on that ship, but the innocents would have priority. And the line between innocent and guilty had been drawn very clearly when the Nihil chose to throw a young child out the airlock. He keyed on his comm.
Bell, do you read me?
Master!
Came the immediate response.
Did you?
I did,
Bell said.
I caught her, and we came down safely. Her name is Bee. She's afraid for her brother and father, but she's all right.
Loden grinned.
I knew you could do it, kid. As far as I'm concerned, nothing the Council could come up with for your trials would beat what you just pulled off. I'm going to put you in for elevation to Jedi Knight as soon as this all gets wrapped up.
Seriously?
Seriously. You heard me, right, Indira?
Absolutely, Loden.
Came Indira Stokes across the comm.
See, Bell? All set. But you need to get Bee back to the outpost. Her mother's there with Portarengo. Tell her we'll have the rest of her family with her before she knows it. Have Portar give her some stew.
I thought I'd introduce her to Ember, too.
Perfect. I'm going to sign off, Bell. Indira and I have some work to do. I look forward to celebrating your elevation, Jedi Knight Zetifar.
Master, thank you.
I'm not your master anymore, Bell. You're a Jedi Knight.
Not until the Council declares it. And I want you there when it happens. May the Force be with you.
It is, Bell. Don't worry. See you soon.
Loden flipped off his comm and brought his focus back to the Nihil ship. They were within laser range, and sure enough, a few bolts whipped back at them from the vessel's aft cannon. He and Indira each dodged to the side,